Well, good morning. It is good to be with you this morning. We are looking this morning actually at a psalm, which I like to just call a song. We've done this before. We've looked at songs during the summer, and I'm going to go ahead and be honest with you. I like musical theater. Let me say that one more time. I like musical theater. Yeah, my mom was a choir director. I like shows. If you're a musical theater aficionado, you know Victor Hugo's Les Miserables, or as we call them, Les Miserables. And I want us to look at Psalm 107 this morning, but I want you to think about, if you've ever seen that show, the character of Fantine, who sings probably one of the most famous of all the songs from that show, I Dreamed a Dream, right? And she sings, I dreamed a dream in time gone by, when hopes were high and life worth living. And that's the way we meet her. And if you watch the movie, you know that's Anne Hathaway. And, you know, there was hope for her. But here's what we know, is that she fell in love with a young man, a little bit older than her, and spent a summer with him. And what happened? She got pregnant. She had this unwanted pregnancy. And she is a single mom in the 19th century in France. And it was obviously difficult to survive. And so she works in a factory. But what do we know? That she was fired because the foreman found out that she had a child, and she was an unwed mom. And she then got really desperate. If you watch the show or the movie, you see that she sells whatever she could. She sells her teeth, right? The gold or silver in her teeth. She sells her hair. And then ultimately, she sells her body, anything to pay the rent. And she ends up on the streets as a prostitute. And ultimately, we know that Fantine dies from sickness that she contracts as a prostitute. And if you listen to the words of the song, I Dreamed a Dream, the end of the song, she says this, I had a dream my life would be so different from this hell I'm living, so different now from what it seemed. Now life has killed the dream I dreamed. Powerful. Psalm 107 talks about a giant, I think, in all of our lives. And it actually wants to kill a giant in all of our lives. And the giant that I think it wants to kill is disappointment. And maybe you are here this morning and you feel disappointed in a certain area of your life, and it's ruling your life, and it's a giant in your life. And we begin to read the Psalms, which are just songs. It's a singer-songwriter. That's all David is. That's all Moses is. He's a singer-songwriter. And when you begin to read Psalm 107, you know, the premise is this, and I think many of us can relate to this, is just very, very plainly, life is hard. Yeah, that's it. And all of life, the music that you hear is not perfect harmony. I know many of us feel that. I know many of you tell me your stories, and that's very true. And you think, okay, I thought I was going to have this symphony, and then all of a sudden, what happens? This cacophony happens in your life. It doesn't work. The tonic and the third and the fifth and the seventh, and you'd begin to change chords. It doesn't work. And it just sounds wrong. It sounds off. And that's what Psalm 107 begins to talk about. Life has a dream, has killed the dream I dreamed, as Fantine sang in Les Miserables. If you ever listened to Randy Pausch in the last lecture when he was going to die, he was giving his last lecture. He said this, no matter how bad things are, you can always make things worse. It's supposed to be a little funny. That is supposed to be. Elizabeth Elliot says about the hard parts and the disappointments of life is our vision is so limited. We can hardly imagine a love that does not show itself in protection from suffering. But the love of God did not protect his own son. He will necessarily protect us, not from anything it takes to make us like his son. A lot of hammering, a lot of chiseling, and purifying by fire will have to go into the process. This is what Jim Elliot's wife, Elizabeth Elliot, says. We know that she lost her husband as they were missionaries reaching out to a tribe that didn't know anything about the gospel. They were just going and they were sharing the gospel, and he was killed by this tribe. And that was her statement. So let me ask you, what do you do with this giant of disappointment? Because I'm assuming that everybody can relate to a disappointment in your life. How do you deal with this? Because the psalmist is writing during a time where Israel is dealing with one of its greatest disappointments. They were essentially captured by the Babylonians, and they were in exile, and they were coming back to the promised land. And you know what the hope was? Is that they would have Zion, the temple, would be rebuilt, and this temple would be glorious. And there'd be this big wall around the temple. And you know what happened? Is they came back and they were hopeful. And they looked at this temple 70 years later. And they were sure it was going to be full of splendor. And you know what they found? Is it wasn't. And they were disappointed. And I wonder, in your life, how do you deal with disappointment? Because in Psalm 107, we get four pictures of disappointment. Four pictures. And maybe you can relate to one of these four pictures, because I think it actually will help you. Things in your life that you thought, you know what, either it is by the situation or by your own sin and your own junk that you've messed it up and you've been disappointed with yourself or the situation. And God says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to be able to deal with this, Westtown. Because the world is looking at you, and they're going to feel all kinds of disappointment. And I wonder if they look at you, and you say, you know what? I've been disappointed by this. And they watch how you deal with disappointment. Maybe, this could be a platform for you to be a megaphone for the grace of Jesus Christ. Because we get a picture of people who are lost, people who are imprisoned, people who are sick, and people who are tossed by storm. That's what these four pictures are. And so this is Psalm 107. I'll start by reading the first nine verses. He starts out very hopeful. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. He's singing a song, right? For his steadfast love endures forever. We've sang this song before. Let the redeemed of the Lord say so, whom he has redeemed from trouble and gathered in from the lands, from the east and from the west and from the north and from the south. And then this is the first picture. Some of you wandered in desert wastes, finding no way to a city to dwell in. Hungry and thirsty, their soul fainted within them. And then this is what they did. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them from their distress. He led them by a straight way till they reached a city to dwell in. Let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love, for his wondrous works to the children of man. For he satisfies the longing soul and the hungry soul he fills with good things. The first picture of disappointment is those in this room, maybe you feel lost. Any mention of wanderings in the desert would, of course, remind the Israelites of 40 years of wandering in the desert. We know this story. When they were hungry, right? They were thirsty, and they were exhausted, and they were grumbling against Moses. And they longed. What did they long for? They were lost, and they said, you know what? God, if you took me out of Egypt, I just want to go back to Egypt. Put chains on my wrists. Put chains on my ankles. As long as I get 3 squares a day, I don't want to be thirsty, and I don't want to be hungry, and I don't want to be exhausted. And so for some of us, you realize that you are lost. And you walked into this world, and you feel like you're in a desert right now. And you thought there was this opportunity. And now you entered into this opportunity, and you're realizing, oh my goodness, I thought this was going to be something that it wasn't. You've taken a job, and you've stepped through this door. You decided to go through this college or to this program, and you get a new job, and you're excited about the new possibilities. But within, what, a year or a few months, some of you in this room, the shine has rubbed off. You don't feel any of that. And you're lost. And now, you know what your life is? When you're thinking it's 11:16 on a Sunday morning, that tomorrow at 9:15, 22 hours later, it's just going to be drudgery. And you know what you feel? You feel disappointment. Some of us in this room are lost. What do you do with that? You thought you were walking through this door of opportunity, and you're not. It's drudgery. And you don't know what to do, and you're disappointed. What goes on? Gives us another scenario. Says some, here's the second picture of disappointment. Some of you, some sat in darkness, verse 10, and in the shadow of death, prisoners in affliction and in irons, for they had rebelled against the words of God and spurned the counsel of the Most High. So he bowed their hearts down with hard labor. They fell down with no one to help. Notice this similar refrain, right? Then what? Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he delivered them from their distress. He brought them out of darkness and the shadow of death and burst their bonds apart. Let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love, for his wondrous works to the children of men. For he shatters the doors of bronze and cuts into the barns of iron. The second picture is those of us in this room right now that are imprisoned. You know, they were imprisoned. Israelites dealt with this. They were imprisoned by Egypt, and they felt like they had been in this, and they were imprisoned by Babylon. But some of us in this room are imprisoned by, you name it. What's the affliction? What's the alcohol? You know you can get through tomorrow as long as you have that hit. As long as you can take that hit. As long as you can have that pill. As long as you know you can get on the computer and see those images. You can make it through the day. And what are you? You're imprisoned. You're imprisoned to this. As long as you make a certain number, you are in jail. And he says, I want you, Israel, I want you, Westtown, I want you to kill this giant. Not just of being lost, but this is the second word picture of being disappointed, of being imprisoned. And sometimes, when you're young and you realize what life would bring and you realize that you enter into these different situations, you get imprisoned to these things. And some of us right now are imprisoned to that. And I want to say, there's hope for you. He wants to kill this giant. You do not have to live a life imprisoned to the drug or the alcohol or the image or you fill in the blank. You don't have to. But what he is saying, what the psalmist is saying is, you've made choices. You've made choices to then say, this is what I'm going to feed on. And he doesn't want you to. He doesn't want you to, for the summer of 2021, for June and July and August, to feed on those things, because it's a false god. And you'll be disappointed. Don't. And he cries out. He brings you out of darkness. He gives you hope. And there are those in this room that are just not lost, but you are now imprisoned. Third picture, verse 17. Some were fools through their sinful ways, and because of their iniquities, suffered affliction. They loathed any kind of food, and they drew near the gates of death. Then they cried to the Lord in their trouble, and he what? He delivered them from their distress. He sent out his word and healed them. Some of you don't think you can be healed. You don't. You just think, this is my state. But the psalmist is saying, no, you can be delivered. And he delivered them from their distress. He sent out his word and healed them and delivered them from their destruction. Let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love, for his wondrous works to the children of man. And let them offer sacrifices of thanksgiving and tell of his deeds in songs of joy. What is he saying? A fool, we know what? A fool refers to someone without morality. Not necessarily someone without intelligence, but without morality. And maybe you're the person that you know, you willfully right now, you rebel against what you know is right. What you know God is saying is right versus wrong. And your choices right now, they are bringing affliction into your life. The testimony of those who are rebelling against the Lord. And he's saying, you don't have to live that way. You don't. You don't have to live in willful rebellion against the Lord. How many times have we seen a seemingly, at least initially, a good-hearted businessman or businesswoman start out right, and then they start to cut corners, and they begin to do what is wrong. They begin to not tell the whole truth, and they willfully go against what is right. Maybe that's you. And you know, you are experiencing disappointment right now, but it's because you've made choices. You've determined to rebel against the law of God. Sometimes it's not life, right? The situation that kills your dreams or my dreams. Sometimes it's our choices that kill our dreams. And we have to be honest about that. We have to be honest about what we're doing. How many times have you seen someone who does this, and you know what they lose? They lose their business, and they lose their family, and they lose their reputation. And he's saying to us, come on, there's hope for you. You don't have to live in this. You don't have to live in this disappointment. You don't have to make these choices. Sometimes we have to be honest and say, it's not life that kills our dreams. It's ourselves that kill our dreams. That's why the Psalms are so powerful, because they diagnose you and they diagnose me and they say, okay, why? Why do I feel disappointment? Why am I looking at my wife, or why am I looking at my daughter? Why am I looking at my friends or my business and I'm always disappointed? Why do I live in this? God, how do you kill this giant in my life? I want to kill it. Well, the last picture that we see is starting in verse 23. Some went down to the sea in ships, doing business on the great waters. They saw the deeds of the Lord, his wondrous works in the deep. For he commanded and raised the stormy wind, which lifted up the waves of the sea. They mounted up to heaven. They went down to the depths. Their courage melted away in their evil plight. They reeled and staggered like drunken men and were at their wits' end. Then, notice this similar refrain, they cried to the Lord in their trouble. And he delivered them from their distress. He made the storm be still, and the waves of the sea were hushed. Then they were glad that the waters were quiet, and he brought them to their desired haven. Let them thank the Lord for his steadfast love, for his wondrous works to the children of man. Let them extol him in the congregation of the people and praise him in the assembly of the elders, the fourth picture. It's when you realize you're doing life the best you can. Have you ever heard of a guy by the name of Chuck Colson? Chuck Colson graduated number one in his class from George Washington University. What did he do? He then was the aide for one Richard Nixon. Number one, right? The aide, this young aide. Here he is, the special aide, this young lawyer. He had great ambitions, and he pursued them no matter what the cost. And he was on Nixon's staff. And people would call him Nixon's hatchet man. That's what they called him. He was doing the best he could, right? He was the one who handled all of Richard Nixon's dirty work, Chuck Colson. And then Watergate, the scandal happened. We know that. You know, Richard Nixon resigned the day after I was born. Just thought you'd like to know that. Very special, special, powerful. He was supposed to actually resign on the day I was born, but then it was just delayed one day, just so you know that. So here he is, wanting to help the president, indicted for what? Obstruction of justice. From the top of his class to what? From the top of his class at George Washington University to what? To a federal prison cell for 7 years, man. That's where he was. This situation took him, and he saw his big dreams come to nothing. What happens when you, maybe this has already happened, your high ambitions, your great, grand ambitions come to nothing? This is what this psalm wants to deal with. He wants to help us. God, we have to deal with God and our relationship with God and our emotions in the real world. And he's trying to help us. How do you kill the giant disappointment? Because there are four pictures here. Four, right? The first picture and the fourth picture is what? It's the lost person who's wandering and what? The guy who has this storm tossed into his life. And you know what? If you really read it, the trouble comes from no fault of their own. Like, they didn't do anything bad. Chuck Colson was doing the best he could for his higher-ups. There are those of us in this room right now that you're just lost. You're not trying to be lost, but you open the door, and next thing you know, you're in the desert. You haven't done, quote, anything wrong. That's the first picture and the fourth picture. And in the second and the third picture, what do we know? Those of us in this room that are imprisoned and that we're sick, and that we're in these situations, why? Because of our own sin. We can't deny it. You are in this ordeal because of your own sin. Not because of anybody else, not because of your wife or your best friend, your dad or your daughter or your son. It's because of you. So you look at this, and what do you say? And this is what's tough about this psalm. You look at the upright and you look at the rebellious, right? First and fourth, second and third. Upright and rebellious. And what do we know? Both are going to experience disappointment. So you say this, hakuna matata, whatever. I'm going to do whatever. I'm going to experience, you know, whatever. You're going to experience disappointment, and you try to do it the best you can, and you know what the Bible says? You're going to experience disappointment. Feels depressing. Feels tough, because you think, some of us think, if I just do it the right way, just give me the formula, and I'll get it right. Straight A's, what I need to do, get into college, do this, what kind of wife, da-da-da-da. I just don't want to experience disappointment. And the Bible says, sorry. Here's the truth of the matter. We're in a broken world. The upright and the rebellious experience disappointment. So we got to learn to deal with it, be it your own sin or somebody else's sin that you have to deal with. It's the state of affairs. And so you look at this and you say, okay, God, what do I do? my dreams. You're telling me, God, dreams are dashed for both the innocent and the guilty? That doesn't seem fair. That doesn't seem right. The righteous and the unrighteous, these four, you get married, and I got married with these great expectations of living happily ever after, but you know what? My marriage is in the toilet. It's a day-to-day struggle, or maybe you are divorced, and life, what, has killed your dreams, and you've dreamed maybe of owning your own business, but that business didn't go anywhere, and COVID's killed it, and it's dead, and maybe you're on the verge of bankruptcy, and maybe you make the varsity team, and you know, man, once spring comes, I'm starting. And you get to spring and you don't start. And you're sure the girl finally, once you lift and you look a little bit better, she's going to like me. I got some pectoralis majors, got some biceps. Finally, right? And she looks right past you. It's like you weren't even there. What God, what are you doing? I've been dreaming of retirement. All these things I can do. Why did my wife get sick? We can't do any of it. Why is my husband like this? And I'm dealing with this disappointment. Do you want to kill this giant of disappointment? And that's what this psalm is meant to do in your life. Maybe you thought things were going to be different and you can't check all the boxes on your bucket list, and life has killed your dreams. So now what? Well, it's actually the answer is right here. We've already read it, what the answer is. What do you do when you have these different levels of disappointment happening? What do you do? Where is God when we are hurting? How does one deal with shattered dreams? Well, here's what we know. We read verse 6. We read verse 13. We read verse 19, and we read verse 28, and what do they all say? Each one says this, then they cried to the Lord in their trouble. Then they cried to the Lord. Then they cried to the Lord. Then they cried to the Lord. Think about the word cry. Maybe you've never cried to the Lord. Maybe you've talked to the Lord. Maybe you've stated data to the Lord. But my question to you is, have you ever cried to him? Because the word in the Hebrew is a word of deep, deep emotion. It's you have to be vulnerable. Not simply asking God for something or praying a passionless prayer. How many in this room have over the past week prayed a passionless prayer? That's not what happened here. They cried. They are crying out in distress. And when you look at Scripture, here's what we know. You see example after example after example. Exodus 2, the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried for help. In the book of Judges, they cried out to the Lord. First Samuel, you hear God gives the Israelites a king. Why? Because they cried out to him. When we are disappointed, when we have our dreams crushed, when we need to let go and we need to be a kid, you know what we're called to do? Is you're called to cry out to your daddy. What if you saw God in that way and you said, you know what? I'm going to cry out. Abba, daddy, father, not God, not Jehovah, not Elohim, not Elroy, Abba, Daddy, Father. Why? Why in this, according to this psalm, is crying the turning point? That's my question. You read them all, four, right? All the four states. Why is crying the turning point? It's because when you cry out, you recognize what? Your need to utterly depend upon God. You realize you are helpless outside of him. And it's only at that point, When you get out of yourselves, when you can't be stoic, you can't be put together. When you say, it's my sin or it's my situation, God, I did everything right and it's just chaos. Then they cried out to God. When's the last time, I ask you, you cried out to God in dealing with your disappointment? Because some of you, you know what you do is you take that disappointment and you internalize it. What happens when you have disappointment after disappointment after disappointment and you internalize that stuff? It bleeds. It bleeds. It bleeds in relationship. People know it. And they hear you and they talk to you and they realize, man, this guy's got something. This girl's got something just stored up in them. I don't know what it is. And many times it's disappointment. Because you know what you won't do? You won't do this. You won't cry out. If my people what? Will humbly pray, will kneel down and pray and cry out to me, you know what I will do? God says, I will heal their land. When's the last time? When's the last time you've recognized how helpless you are and how dependent you are upon God and you've cried out? Proverbs 1:7 says this, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. I think that's the same thing as crying out. It's the same thing as saying, God, I cannot do this. And so I ask you, when is the last time that you have cried out to him? Because that is the testimony of each one of these pictures. Hey, we're lost, we cried out. We're in sin, we've done this, we're in prison, we then cried out. We're in this situation, we're tossed by this storm, we then cried out to him. In the first picture, God takes those lost and wandering in the desert. And what does it say? We've already read it. What does he do? They cried out. He leads them to what? To a city. He leads them to a city where what? They can actually be settled and filled and satisfied. It points us to the great New Jerusalem in Revelation 21 and 22, where it's this garden, but it's a garden that's developed into a garden city. And that we can experience him fully. In the second picture, God takes the prisoner awaiting execution. And what does he do? He says, you know, you don't have to be ruled by those pills or that alcohol or that pornography. You know what I'm going to do? You cry out to me, I'm going to cut them. I'm going to say, you don't have to. You don't have to. You cry out to me, I will provide a way out. I won't have you say, you know what? I'm looking for opportunities to get this pill or to make sure people drink over here so I feel a little different or to look at these images to make me kind of, you know, haze over. I don't have to do that. God says, I want to break free. I want you to break those chains. In the third picture, God takes what? A sick person who has no appetite and is on the brink of death and he heals them and he gives them life. And in the fourth picture, God takes a sailor who's being tossed about by these storms. He didn't do anything wrong. He's just entering into life. He takes this and he's tossed about by this catastrophic storm. And what does he do? He says, I'm going to still the waters and I'm going to guide you to safe harbor. But I need you to what? I need you to cry out to me. When's the last time that you cried out to him and understood? Because it's the testimony that we hear. Read a book written by Chuck Colson, right? Read a book by him, and you will hear the testimony of the Lord. You will hear a testimony of a man who said, you know what? I was lost. I was in sin, and God has taken me, and he has redeemed me. He had taken me as a prisoner of my own sin, and he has redeemed me, has changed me. Ultimately, what does all of the Old Testament point to? The faithfulness of God. And how is the faithfulness of God climaxed? Well, we know it's in Matthew, it's in Mark, it's in Luke, and it's in John. It's in the Gospels. All of the faithfulness of God is this telescope in roughly what? That's roughly 500 BC. 500 years later, we know the faithfulness of God is manifest, it's climaxed. It says when the earth was fully pregnant, when the earth was fully ready, what? Here comes Jesus. It pushes us always to the work of Jesus. That you can't do it. You can't do it right. But Jesus can. You can't cry out perfectly, but Jesus can. He can cry out, Abba, Father, why have you forsaken me? But you know what? Not my will, but yours be done. And that's what he did in the Garden of Gethsemane. He said, I'm going to take it on myself. And he took that pain, and it all points us towards the work of Jesus as our only hope. But if we know this, if we know that Jesus has accomplished this, you know what? Here's what the scriptures say, is that Jesus says, I'm going to ascend. We know this in the book of Acts. Jesus ascends into heaven, and he gives us the Holy Spirit. And when we have the Spirit of Christ in us, what do we have? We have the power through Christ, not in our own self. We have the power to what? Defeat these giants. And some of you who are upright and have had hard things happen to you have to say, you know what? I cannot do this on my own. It's only through Christ who gives me strength. And some of you right now who you know you've blown it, and you know you're constantly addicted to these things, or you've, you know, been disappointed because of your own sin, you realize, I can't live in that truth. I've got to live in the work, the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Because all of this points us to Jesus. And when you realize that, that should, what? Set you free. That God's love is absolutely unfailing. He will take your disappointments if you allow him, and if you cry out to him, and you know what he'll do? He'll use it for your glory. I was in Charleston this week, and my buddy, Jake's, there's a big travel ball tournament, and there's a bunch of families on this team, and it was late at night, and we were there, and it's 10 o'clock, and I'm trying to keep my eyes open. We're down at the bottom of this hotel, and everyone's talking, and they had a couple, you know. And so I'm, you know, they're pretty, and I'm like, okay, cool. You're a pastor, right? You know. And next thing, you know, I'm like, great, here we go. Oh, boy. But two different guys came up to me that night and said, they shared some things in their life about disappointments that they experienced, and they didn't know how to deal with this. And they said, you know, I'm just trying to get it right. I'm just trying to do it right. I've gone to church. I've gone to this Catholic church. I want to make sure I do it right so God thinks I'm okay. You know what I got to tell them? I got to tell them about Jesus. I got to tell them that he has done everything right for you, and that is the gift of eternal life. And so when somebody, when you see on the television, on ABC, when Florida State's hopefully beating the Gators, and you see John 3:16 held up, right, in that poster, and you realize God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in the life and the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, whoever believes in that will not perish but have everlasting life. I got to share that with them. Say, look, no matter what disappointment you're feeling that you don't want to talk about, but you know, and you know in this room, it plays itself out in your marriage if you feel disappointed with how much money you make or how your body looks in your marriage or, you know, however it manifests yourself. The scriptures here, Psalm 107 says, I want to destroy that for you. I want to kill that giant. What if you were no longer ruled by disappointment in your life? But rather, you lived in the hope of the work of Jesus Christ. How would that change your marriage? How would that change you being a father? Or you being a son? Or you being a friend? Are you kidding me? Or you deciding to go next door and letting somebody know the salvation of Jesus Christ. If you could kill the giant of disappointment, man, I think we'd be changed. That's why God gave us the Psalms, is to kill certain giants in our life that he doesn't want, that he doesn't want. And I think for some of us, the giant of disappointment is ruling our lives, and he wants the giant of Jesus Christ and his life and his death and his resurrection to rule far more than whatever we thought life would bring. So let me pray and ask that God would sear that into our